Pure Dog Talk is the podcast on purebred dogs. We talk to the legends in the sport and give you tips and tools to create an awesome life with your purebred dog. From showing to preservation breeding, from competitive obedience to field work, from agility to therapy dogs, and all the fun in between, your passion is our purpose. Welcome to Pure Dog Talk. I'm your host, Laura Reeves. Today is Mentor Monday, and we have one quick reminder from your Dog Show Superintendents Association. Get your entries in early. It's a win-win. Welcome to Pure Dog Talk. I'm your host, Laura Reeves, and today we are talking to Ed Thomason. Ed is a breeder of American Staffordshire Terriers and also a professional handler. And so we're going to talk a little bit today about why these two things are not mutually exclusive. So, Ed, tell us a little bit. Give us the 411.
Well, thank you for having me. As you said, my name is Ed Thomason. I breed American Staffordshire Terriers. My wife and I do under the Alpine prefix. I've also been a professional dog handler for quite some time now.
You started in...
Let's just go a long time ago.
Okay.
I look around now and I remember when I was the young guy, and now I'm not that young guy anymore. So,
Right?
Yeah.
Crazy how that creeps up on us.
Quickly. Looking at the gray. Yeah. You can't see that in radio land, but I have always been very passionate about the sport of purebred dogs. I started in the UKC, actually, and showing American Pitbull Terriers, and as I like to say, graduated into showing American Staffordshire Terriers within the American Kennel Club in California. That's where I started.
Okay, and so I think that we talk a lot in this sport about professional handlers versus owner handlers, or owner handlers versus professional handlers. Fact, you were an owner handler.
Yeah, I still am today.
Right.
I still consider myself one today.
And you are now a professional handler because you put in the time. And
yeah.
Tell us about your mentors.
Oh, I've been very blessed to have some very, very good mentors in this sport. Growing up in California, always looked up to California dog handlers. Lori Fenner has always treated me like family, and I give her as much credit as anybody in developing me into the dog handler I am today, whether it was listening to me on the phone when I was trying to special the Tibetan Mastiff as a top five group dog, or just teaching me at her handling class many years ago. She deserves a lot. When I moved up to Washington, and after I met my wife through dogs, Don Rogers was very good to me. The late Don Rogers, he was always very pleasant to me. He always thought very highly of my wife, so I kind of had the in with Don. If you knew Don, that helped. I talk a lot about Luke Bagginsauce and I kind of growing up together in certain ways. I mean, we weren't young, but we traveled together a lot, and many people probably remember him and I together. So, you know, he is as much a mentor to me as anybody else in that fact, because we learned a lot together. So.
Right. So when you're talking to owner handlers, and I know you do handling classes, and I know you do a lot of work with people, when you're talking to owner handlers, what are your tips to them?
I have a lot, but there's a couple really good ones that I think apply. I used the analogy, I used it last night when we did the synopsis, but I use the analogy that if I can drive the race car better than you, I'm going to be better than you. So Michael Andretti is a famous race car driver. If I got into a Ferrari next to him, he's going to do that lap faster than I am. I think dogs are the same way. That's just by experience, though. And it's a different mentality. When I teach handling class, I talk often about people that come into the ring, and the first thing they're doing is they're so concerned with every other dog in the class but their own. And so I use different scenarios, like you walk into a class of five and four of them are owner breeder handlers or owner handlers and one of them is a professional handler, and you're one of those owner handlers and you're staring at the other three dogs going, wow, look at the front on that dog, or look at the rear on that dog, or maybe it's positive comments and negative comments, but the whole time you're doing that, you're not paying attention to your dog or your charge at that time. While that professional handler's in the ring, he's only concerned with making sure, or she, that particular dog they are showing at that moment looks to the best they can present it, and chances are that's better than you because they're paying attention to what they're doing, and you often get beat because of that. Then, I mean, we can go really deep into this, then we think it's politics and we use excuses as to why we weren't successful, and ultimately it starts with ourselves. The most successful people in this sport that are owner breeder handlers, like Pat Craig, Trotter, sorry Chuck if you're listening, the most successful folks in this sport, they're masters at what they do, whether it's conditioning, grooming, and presentation. They are not going in to stare at other people's dogs. They're going in to present their dog the best of their ability, which is generally very good and very high, and they're there to win, and they show you that everything they do in the ring. That's the biggest obstacle. It happens every weekend. It's happening at the show we're at right now. Somebody's in a class right now staring at another person's dog while their dog's left front's going towards the east and the other one's going right towards the west. And they're, you know, and the best dogs in the world can make themselves look horrible. And judges are people. And I can preach about this for hours. And
no, I think you're dead on. And I think preach, man, yeah. Because honestly, the judge has 2 minutes to see our dogs, right?
Yep.
Yep. And if during those 2 minutes that dog never looks wrong, and this other one over here looks like a train wreck, which one's going to win?
Yeah, it really is that simple.
It is.
And I teach about moments. So the assistants that work for me know that when they bring my dogs ringside, if they are standing next to the ring, the dog should be stacked and look like it's in the ring. Otherwise, you're away from the ring. Because judges are no different than people. This is my opinion. Another analogy I use often is if you're walking down the mall and you see me dressed up like I was for Woofstock, you would be talking about that, right? You'd be like, look at that guy's beard, it's painted pink, or look at the outfit the guy has on. Well, when a judge is in the ring and you think that they're not looking outside the ring or they're not looking at your dogs when they're judging other dogs, it very much they are. So it's our job to make them look the best we possibly can. And you only get moments to do that. And every moment you have, if you capitalize on each one of those moments better than your competitors, chances are you're going to win. Today is a good example of that. I was in the group ring and I went second with my AM staff. And right when the judge was making that decision, I threw bait, which I do often if you know me. And most of the time my dogs are very good at containing themselves. He was walking right towards me. I threw the bait. The dog leaped in the air and went to go get it. He walked right past me and went to another dog. And I went second. I don't know if that was the ultimate decision, but that was a moment that I could have done better, and possibly my dog could have done better.
Right. Absolutely. And I think another misconception sometimes in this us against them sort of mindset that has developed, truly, in the time frame that I've been involved in the sport, this didn't always exist, that mindset.
And it shouldn't be. The breeders are the backbone of this sport. Without dog breeders, there's no dog handlers. And I will say this, and this upsets some of my colleagues, dog handlers need to remember that as well.
It's an absolute fact.
They have to remember that they work for breeders. Those are your clients. It's your responsibility to work for them and do your best to make them happy. They are the consumer. They are the customer. I have a different background in business, so I see this in a different light than some people do. You know, I'll be really honest with you. You know, I've probably in some points, in some circles, have been critiqued because I didn't grow up in this sport, and I didn't. I made my way in this sport. I wasn't raised in it. I am the first generation person in my family to do the sport of purebred dogs. But I, for a long time, used to bother me when people would say that because I wasn't one of the ones that did it. But guess what? I actually think it's a benefit to me because I know more about business than the average dog handler does. And I think it helps me treat people differently. And I actually have had judges comment about that. They're like, do you have like some sort of business degree? Or I said, no, I run a business. I have a business background. And they're like, you can tell how you interact with people versus somebody who's maybe not been in, just been in dogs and not in the other part of the world, the working world.
In the real world, we call that.
Yeah, in the real world. I wasn't going to say that, but yeah.
No,
but anyways, I guess I'm kind of going off on a different subject.
No, but I think the part that we were talking about that I think is so important is that there are an enormous number of professional dog handlers who started as breeders.
Absolutely.
And we can run the names from Bill McFadden to on down the list. Luke's parents.
Oh, yeah. Great breeders.
Rick Bagenstos is a breeder of Wirehair Pointing Griffons very successfully. So
I think the best in the country, in my humble opinion.
Humble work.
Yeah, I'm working on that.
But my point is the divide of the us against them didn't exist. When I came into this sport in the early 80s, my family, we learned from Don Rogers.
Yeah.
Right? That was who taught me.
Yeah.
And we didn't think that professional handlers were bad. Those were our friends.
Yeah.
Because they taught us things.
I agree. And some of it's our fault as handlers. And we have to talk about the reasons why that is. And we have to be willing to place blame on ourselves, too, because we often are in our own little worlds. We're so busy. We work for client X, Y, and Z, and we're treating them with the best of our ability, but not realizing that every time that we're at the dog show, I guess let me back up a little bit. I teach the assistants who work for me that every person showing a dog is a potential customer. So, and again, I sound business right now, but every person there is a potential customer. But the minute we walk into the arena where we're showing dogs at, we are happy. The dogs are happy. We're doing everything we can to present how we do it to be better than the other person, right? That means we're talking to people, people talk to us, we're hopefully friendly. And that's gone a lot. People don't generally like to talk to people. Some are better than the others at it, I will admit that. But the minute we stop communication between a handler and a breeder that's in a class, what happens? There all of a sudden becomes animosity that builds, and then it's us against them. Because and last night we talked about this as well. At the end of it, and this is a different podcast that you've already had, but all of us together have to figure out how to unite to make sure that we continue our support further. So, and listen, money dog handlers, there's so many great ones across this country. They do wonderful jobs with all the dogs they show, and they love every person that they're around and just love the dogs and the people. But we have to ask ourselves at the end of the day when there's a problem, is it a problem that we caused collectively, or is it a problem that they caused collectively? And chances are it's a little bit of both.
A little bit of both.
So it's something we got to work on. And it's very easy to be a breeder and a handler and love dogs.
Absolutely.
And we all have that in common.
And I think too often we lose sight of the commonality.
Yeah, I agree. It's a competitive sport, and it's got more competitive. In my time in this sport, it's gotten, the more dog shows they are, the more competitive it is, the harder you have to work to attain a ranking for a particular dog. All that drives competition, right? So when you're competitive, you're not thinking about the person next to you. You're thinking about the end result, in most cases, not everybody. And that in itself, you can drive a wedge between you and another person very quickly.
Right. And so going forward, your best recommendation, let's say two other handlers. Talk to the other handlers who aren't always as charming to the world.
Yeah.
You know, because it happens.
We all have that days.
Right? Let's talk to our peers.
Yeah, I'm all up for that. I think it's a great idea. I also think that we need to figure out ways to keep people at dog shows all day long. I think that when different handler organizations are doing events and breeders and new people are participating, and it's our job that people have done this for a while or to help them and bring them along and teach them the things we know. An owner, breeder, handler has a distinct advantage over a dog handler. And they don't see that advantage. They spend every day with that one dog. They train that one dog. They have a relationship with that one dog. Today I showed 17 dogs. It was my responsibility to have that relationship with 17 dogs. And I hope I did a good job of doing that. But I'm sure I don't have the same relationship as an owner of those dogs do have. They have its distinct advantage. Let's teach them how to get better at it.
Right.
Guess what happens? When they get better, we get better. That means we're all raising our game.
The sport gets better.
It gets stronger. And that's good. These people are the ones breeding most of the dogs that we're showing. They're the backbone.
Absolutely. And I really think when I was in the Midwest, I didn't show as many dogs. I did a lot of teaching people how to show dogs. There is a mindset in the particular area I was in that is very, if you will, DIY, do it yourself.
Yeah.
People want to show their own dogs. You know, it is not a handler's job to go to every person who has a pretty dog and say, here, let me show that for you.
No. No, it's not. I mean, ultimately, you want them to come to you because they recognize the ability you have to groom it, present it, condition it on a top level. And some of them don't have time. Some people realize very quickly, it's cheaper for me to hire that handler to special my dog because I'm splitting expenses with the other dogs that are on the truck. They realize that if it becomes a financial game to them, that it's, in the long run, cheaper to hire that handler. There's multiple reasons that they may or may not hire somebody.
Right. But I think the point is there's a lot of people that want to do it themselves.
Yeah.
Instead of, perhaps, as a suggestion, instead of going to everybody with a pretty dog and saying, here, let me show this dog, you say, hey, let me help you show that better.
Why don't we have handler clinics for adults?
Right.
Why not?
I am all over that.
You know, if somebody wants to learn how to do something better and we have the ability to teach them, yeah, I think it's our responsibility to help them. And listen, there's a lot of people doing that stuff. This is a minority, I think, in our sport that isn't willing to help somebody else do something. And I think it's important to note that. The majority would. I mean,
and
I could
do,
ask.
And do all the time.
Absolutely. I could ask Luke right now to help me if I had a mini bull and I needed help with it. He would be over here in a second to help me.
And I think the Professional Handler Association, the AKC Registered Handlers Association, do put on these clinics. And the handlers are there. They're the ones teaching the clinics. And I think that more clubs could set that up and arrange for that as part of the weekend.
It absolutely has to become part of the weekend. We have to look at the big picture of things, and when we talk about how to drive people to dog shows, and realize that the older ways of doing it, just assuming that folks are going to come to your show because you assume you have a good panel, that's going to drive people to the show. It doesn't happen anymore. This particular show we're at is considered a large dog show. I don't know what else is in the country right now. Maybe Dallas is close to the show. There's 1,600 dogs here. That used to be a small dog show.
Yeah.
Now, but if you look back really quick and look at the most successful dog shows in our side of the country, in the Northwest is what I'm talking about, I would think of Olympic Dog Fanciers. And you know what drives people to that dog show? It isn't to run around in a circle. It's they have dock diving. They have barn hunt. They have lure coursing, fast cat.
Right.
I really don't know most of these events because my wife does them all. But but they have all these other reasons to drive people to the dog show other than running around in a circle for 5 minutes.
And I think adding education,
it's huge,
has got to be part of that.
It does, because the minute we start educating people and teaching them the tricks of the trade, if you will, they become more successful.
More successful
and they stick
and
with it.
Happier because they're more successful. Yeah.
Success drives happiness in anything
Absolutely.
You do in life.
Absolutely.
Whether it's a relationship or work, it's the same.
Same, same.
Success drives happiness. So
Excellent.
I agree with you.
Okay. Any other really solid tips going forward for the new person? Brand new, first dog show, best Ed Thomason tip.
Don't get discouraged quickly. I talked last night about a lady in my own particular breed, Amstaffs, who has a class bitch here. And there's three class bitches entered at this show. I have two of them on my truck, and one of them is this very new person. In my opinion, she should be winning winner's bitch over the two bitches I'm showing, and she's not. And I personally have went up to her and try not to get her discouraged. She also has tried to hire me repeatedly, and I won't take her dog. And it's not because I don't think it's a good enough dog for me to show. I think I'd finish it in 2 seconds. The ultimate thing is I want her to learn how to do it herself so she enjoys it more. It's easy to get discouraged quickly. Either one of two things happen. You get discouraged, you leave. You get discouraged, and you hire somebody. And it's okay to hire people. I'm not anti-handler. I make a living doing showing dogs. But I think when you have your first dog, it's my opinion, if you have interest in showing dogs, and you obviously do in this case if you're doing it yourself, if you have interest in showing dogs, you should go through the peaks and valleys of finishing your first champion. Because when you do, you're going to feel this overjoyous emotions that you accomplished the goal you set out to do. And I can't make you feel that way by doing it for you. And so don't get discouraged. Ask a lot of questions. And don't be afraid to ask questions. Find people in your breed that are successful. And figure out who they are. And by successful, that means you like the type of animal they breed. You see them successful in the dog show ring. And copy them. Go talk to them. Ask them questions. People are willing to help.
Right.
But you have to be willing to do those steps. Because yeah. I don't know that you want help. You have to come ask me, or Laura, or Luke, or Rick, or whoever that may be. So, those are my guys.
Okay. Thank you, Ed. I sure appreciate your time. Yeah. I know it's been a long day.
No, I appreciate you having me. It's an honor to do this. I think it's wonderful what you guys do for the sport, and I'm happy to help in any way I can.
Thank you.
As always, if you have any questions or input, we'd love to hear from you. The show notes and links to resources on today's topic are available at puredogtalk.com. Drop us a note in the comments or email to laura@puredogtalk.com. Remember, guys, this podcast is for you. So if you want to know something, give me a holler. We'll do a podcast for you. If you wouldn't mind, you could help me out here. Take a couple minutes to visit iTunes and give us a review. This will help share the love with others out there in the sport. This has been Pure Dog Talk with your host, Laura Reeves. We hope you can join us next time as we continue on the journey to success with your purebred dog.